How good are you at reading the blueprint? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Well, Barry, it's good to be back in the studio. It's not so great to be back up here because I was in Orlando last week at this time, and it was about 85 degrees and sunny.
Well, so, we almost hit that here day before yesterday, so you brought some of it back with you. It trailed along in a tailwind, I guess.
Maybe in your part of the state. In our part of the state, it did not exceed about 62.
Oh, yeah. No, it was nearly 80 here a couple days ago, so it was weird in February, and you're wearing short sleeve shirt sleeves to go out and run errands. It was quite something.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but it is good to be back in town and see all the stuff going on. I was very sad. I was in Florida when the shooting down in Broward County happened, and yes. That was very sad. But it is good to be back and talk about some of these issues.
Well, it is, Chuck, and you know, we're still sorting through all of the what, who, what, when, where, whys, and whereofs of that particular situation there at the school. You know, and of course, it's created this massive hue and cry across the, well, left landscape for banning guns. And that's fine. You know, that is just their initial reaction to this. Instead of saying, possibly, let's take a look at the individual who committed this heinous act, and let's look at the, as we're now seeing, a large trail of clues going, stretching back at least 18 months, Chuck.
Further than that, actually.
I mean, yeah. Actually, it's probably further than that, but I saw something here just the other day. It was basically saying that there were like 34 or 36 separate calls that law enforcement, et cetera, or social welfare had been made regarding this young man prior to the attack, and that this really looks like it constituted a massive failure of pretty much everybody who's involved in law enforcement and analysis and recognizing the signs of impending danger, that they all basically had blinders on.
It was 39.
39. Thank you. I'm glad you looked it up because I couldn't remember exactly that number. But again, you know what? And of course, this was a young man who was, I believe, 19 years old, so he was out of school at that point. And so there wasn't so much that the school itself could have done at this point. But, you know, if you think about it, Chuck, and it's kind of leading into where we're going to, our kids today are faced with an awful lot of pressures, an awful lot of influences, an awful lot of material that's coming at them, et cetera, that can create a toxic mix in their brains. And then you have situations like this young man here. And of course, you know, if now the media, we want to reach back and we're talking about Columbine and we're talking about Sandy Hook and we're talking about, you're just going down the list of all of these. And of course, there's only one thread to the media that ties all these particular heinous acts together, and that's the presence of a firearm. But that's not true. There are other things that are tying these heinous acts together, and some of those are environmental issues. Some of those are issues, and we don't know yet with this individual, at least I haven't seen, where possibly psychotropic medicines are involved and have been involved in the past with these individuals. But we do know that that was involved in Columbine and in Sandy Hook and in other places. We don't know completely the role of violent video games. We also don't know completely the role of basic peer pressures, you know, upon young people. But, you know, we're talking with someone today, Chuck, who does have a better handle on some of the things that a young person today has to face and is working very hard in the field to create environments and opportunities and options for kids to be able to successfully navigate these years that we sometimes call adolescence, which honestly really isn't it's more of a psychological term than anything else. But we know that if we had these type of pressures, these type of decisions, without good information or without being able to reach out for resources to people who have experience and who understand these things, life would probably be a lot different for most of us. Many of us have had very, very positive backgrounds and interactions with teachers, with family members, with our extended families. But that's not always the case with many of these young people. And sometimes it takes someone being in the classroom telling them that, you know, you are valuable, you are worth protecting and worth keeping intact, both physically and emotionally and mentally, as you grow into adulthood during this hard time of adolescence. I know, Chuck, you had three daughters, and I've got two boys and a girl. And the teen years sometimes can be a rather frustrating time for everybody in the household. But if you don't have a lot of those family supports, and, you know, it's sounding to me like with this particular situation here in Florida, that was part of the mix that was missing. And of course, you know, as I mentioned earlier, do we understand how to read the blueprints? Because there's a blueprint that we have for our lives. It's first of all, it's found in Scripture. We understand that, you know, if we put our thinking and our practice in line with what God said is good and he requires of us, that we find that we have, success. Now, I don't mean like, I'm not the name and claim it, that kind of thing. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about the fact that God protects and keeps us. When we deviate from that, or when we try to make it up on our own, that's usually when we run into trouble and consequences start occurring. Significant consequences in many cases, and in some cases consequences that envelop others in the issue as well, as we're seeing here with these school shootings. But, Chuck, I mean, when you get right down to it, what kids really need in their adolescence is someone basically saying, there's a better way, you know, and helping them stop and think through some of the thoughts that are going through their head and the decisions that they're making, and to, you know, basically put on maturity, put on wisdom. And I think that's sorely needed. And of course, I think in many of our homes and families today, as you know, we've looked at the breakdown of the family and the culture. That's something that we see being removed from the equation, taken off the blueprint, is family involvement. I mean, you get to the point now where if a young kid that they want to go up and say, well, just like a case here in Cincinnati, they don't like the gender that they were born as, so they want to go and change everything. And if the parents are saying, well, we don't think that that's healthy or best for you, well, they can just, you know, make a couple phone calls to crisis lines or whatever, and then the government intervenes and the courts intervene, and pretty soon you have a mess that's run more by politics than it is by principle and what's best for a student or a young person, excuse me. We're seeing this all over the place. But thankfully, we've got some folks who are deeply involved in the lives of young people, helping them to understand how to navigate this thing we call adolescence and how to do it safely and healthily so that they can have the best outcomes possible and meet their life goals. And Chuck, you and I talk about this a lot, and we plug it some on our program. But one of our favorites is a program called Relationships Under Construction, which is based out of the Powell, Delaware area. We are both intimately familiar with it because I used to be a board member for this organization, and you are a current board member of the organization.
I am.
But people have heard us flap our gums about this for a while. We thought it was time to actually let you hear it straight from the source. And so we're very, very pleased today that we have on as a guest to talk a little bit more about the background of what you do and what the organization does. We have as our guest the Executive Director of Relationships Under Construction, Catherine Wood. Catherine, welcome to our program today.
Thanks, Barry and Chuck. It's good to be here.
Yeah, well, it's good to hear you. And boy, you sound good there. So, Chuck, this is a better connect than we've had in a while. Chuck, you're a current board member. I mean, why don't you go ahead and kind of let's talk about the background of Catherine, of where you come from and why you do what you do, and then what Relationships Under Construction is all about.
Well, Relationships Under Construction teaches youth the blueprint for strong future families, and that is our mission. And, you know, our goal is to strengthen future families worldwide. And we've had the opportunity to share our lessons around the world. We are very, of course, embedded in Ohio, and we want to reach as many students in Ohio as possible. And so we work in a 32-county area, and we go to the schools, and we are guest presenters in the schools. And we are allowed to come in for up from 5 to 9 sessions a year for each one of the students. And it's each grade level at 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade, and then high school. So we see about 25,000 students a year. And it's just very exciting. We get tons and tons of comments. And I would like to share a quick comment with you. This is a female 8th grade, Hardin County. I learned that I'm definitely not the only one to remain abstinent until marriage. I can find someone with the same morals as me. So we get just thousands of comments, and I wish I could say our website was all up to date, and we do have lots of comments there, but we have lots more that are not there. So it's just a very exciting time that the schools would allow us to come in and teach about important topics. And we teach not only about saving sex for marriage, but we teach risk avoidance to unhealthy behaviors, including sexual activity before marriage, alcohol, tobacco, drugs, dating, violence, bullying, gambling, pornography, and human trafficking. And RUC, as we call it, Relationships Under Construction, encourages optimal health and healthy relationships for all youth, including the opportunity to reach their full potential as adults. So thank you for having me on.
Oh, well, we're glad to have you on. And I want to thank you for, it's not just about, we get a lot of flack. It's all about abstinence, you know, we hear about, and it's not. It's an entire worldview education, really, in a nutshell, delivered in a very compact package. You're teaching people that there is a way to view life other than just short-term, live in the here and now and don't bother thinking about the future. You're sort of telling people, no, you're here for quite a long time, and you've got to think about these things. I know I helped do a calculation where we explained to people how much money they will save themselves over their lifetimes by maintaining a clean living lifestyle, if you will.
Right.
And I know you're also involved in helping to prevent kids from being exploited and trafficked and that kind of thing by falling into the nightmares getting involved in with people who do not have your best interests at heart.
Right. And Chuck, we have a program. Relationships Under Construction has been around for, I started teaching really in 1987. We actually wrote the curriculum in 2004, so we've been around a long time. And that is a sexual risk avoidance program that is designed to help kids understand why marriage is important and why it's important to our society, why it's important to their community, why it's important to them individually. We're just helping them understand why marriage works. And they are in a culture that they don't think marriage works at all anymore. And there's lots of proof around them that it didn't work. So we're going back in and saying, let's take a second look at this. In fact, we asked them to look through a different camera lens because we understand that they do not have the same view of marriage as we had growing up. And so if they can look through a different camera lens at what marriage really is all about, then we can start to talk about that marriage is a good response to our communities, and that it will help strengthen their family and the community that they live in. And when you look at communities right now, they need strengthening. So that's something that we work really hard on.
I like the way that, and one of the reasons I continue to serve on RUC is because I like the way, first of all, the hard work that you put in, because you said you wrote the curriculum in 2004, I think. It just because you wrote it in 2004 doesn't mean it didn't get rewritten like umpteen thousand times since then. I know you're constantly working on updates
the 0.7 version or something of that nature, Chuck.
Exactly.
The revision of the revision. And Catherine, it isn't because what you have written in the curriculum has fallen into disrepute or has been proven false. It's because you've been required to add so many more facets to it in order to meet the demands that the public, i.e. and the legislature, have put on you as providers and teachers in the schools because of all of the dysfunction that's been going on around our kids. I mean, I heard you run down that list of things, and I'll tell you what, you surprised me with one of them, and I've been around you for years. I didn't realize that you guys had to roll in some things about gambling issues.
Oh, definitely.
See, now, that was again, folks, I mean, this is just where you go, that this is how much spiraling out of control our culture has become and how much it affects our kids. When you start thinking, yeah, because, you know, you went down to dating violence and all of this and the bullying and everything else. Yeah, all of these things are folks people think about. But, you know, wait a minute. You got to teach adolescents and teenagers about gambling addictions? And then you stop and think about it. It's like, well, why not? I mean, we're treating them like they can make adult decisions. And again, in many cases, when you talk about some of your, shall we say, people on the other side of the divide of your particular issue, Catherine, they basically treat young people at any stage like, well, hey, you know, you're fully ready to just jump in and do whatever you feel like. So why not? Let's just show you how to do it, versus thinking about someone at their maturity level, their developmental stage, their emotional and psychological development, and working in that framework to say there are good options for you to choose and there are poor options for you to choose, and here are the ways that you can make those better decisions. Now, that's the reason why I really, really like what you and the folks that you work with around in the larger coalition across the state do. Is you actually treat young people not as adults, but you treat them as young people who can be encouraged to think through consequences.
And that is so true. That thinking through, that decision-making process is so important. And one of the things we know that comes from brain research is we know the brain is not fully developed until around age 25. So when you look at teenagers, we realize that they are just getting the decision-making part of their brain. And so they need help to develop that and to really think through issues. And, you know, we always say to our kids and our grandkids, what were you thinking? Well, they weren't. So that's why they really need help with this decision-making process and looking at different options and weighing the consequences of those options, and then really coming up with a decision on their own. So we give them the information to come up with that decision. The other thing that I was going to say is that our curriculum, Constructing Safe Relationships, came about because of the law for dating violence education in Ohio. And that law requires that there are two classes grade level, 7th grade through 12th. And so we, you know, when that first came out, we had requests all over the places from school. And in fact, one of our instructors put out an email to the teachers they were serving and said, we're working on dating violence, and they got 16 requests within the first hour. So we have developed our dating violence curriculum. And, you know, the dating violence curriculum that we use, we have put in stories from our own instructors, and we've really developed it into something that they can look at and come up with a good plan to not be involved in dating violence, a good plan to help their friends, a good plan to help decrease violence. And so we offer them something so much more than our commission. Just give them lists. It's boring. So the classroom teachers actually want our program because it's interesting and it's educational, and I would say fun, but is dating violence, talking about dating violence, ever fun?
Yeah, that's tough to imagine, yeah. But
right. Go ahead, Chuck.
No, I really like that part of the program. I was thinking, you know, these all, Barry's question, and I'll go back to it for a minute. What you've basically pointing out here is that addictive behaviors of all kinds are destructive not only of yourself, but of any person you choose to share your life with on a permanent basis. In other words, it's not just abstinence before marriage. It's a sex addiction through pornography. It's addiction to alcohol or drugs. It's addiction to gambling. It's addiction to entertainment.
Social media.
Yeah, exactly. Facebook and just hanging around on the internet all day, every day, and texting and IMing and doing all these things. And it's amazing that you can point out, and it also has to do with dating, really a dating addiction, if you will. It's not everybody, for the most part in our culture, dates. But some people become obsessed with it to the point that they are willing to put up with all kinds of evil and violence and those kinds of things in order to have a boyfriend or a girlfriend.
Addiction to drama.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes. There you go.
Yes. Yeah, go ahead, Barry.
No, please go ahead, Catherine.
Well, I was just going to say the biggest thing that has really been requested in the last couple of years is this whole thing of addiction, and especially to opioids. That opened the door, but we then, 2 years ago, put out a new lesson on addiction and relationships. And that was presented in high schools last year 55 times, and 37 times that we presented that, it was done by youth pastors that we trained. They cannot go into the school and say they're a youth pastor. They are an RUC instructor. They can't mention where they work or anything like that, but they are presenting the addiction and relationships lesson, which starts out with talking about addiction to opioids and how the brain functions, but then goes into several other addictions, including pornography. Mm-hmm. And we know that when you're talking about relationships can be destroyed by pornography, and nobody wants to touch that pornography issue with a 10-foot pole. And so we just decided we were going to do it, and we were going to actually not only train our RUC instructors, but actually train youth pastors who we know, many of whom are involved in that addiction. And so we're confronting them with the facts. And then out of that, we're hoping to turn some of them around, and then the ones that are strong enough and have not been involved, then they can go and teach young people about that addiction. And it's just been amazing to see what's happening with that. It's ministering on both sides of the aisle, that we're working with youth pastors and we're working with the young people. And then this summer, we did two more new lessons, one for 7th grade, one for 8th grade. The 7th grade talks about human trafficking. Its title is Prey, Predators, and Protectors. The 8th grade deals with the myths of addiction. And, we all think about addiction in different ways. And a lot of people say, well, if you just had enough willpower, you would be able to, conquer this addiction to pornography. Well, it's like saying you have enough willpower to conquer cancer, because when your brain addiction actually changes your brain, and it makes your brain operate in a different way. And so until you can retrain your brain, which for some people is extremely difficult because their brain reacts differently to addiction than other people's brains. And so it really is a disease. And so we work really hard on helping young people think about addiction in a different way and relate it to relationships.
Yeah, biochemically, I am a biochemist, so I do have a sort of a very rusty working knowledge of some of the chemistry involved. Some of those brain chemistry issues are extremely complex, and it takes, in some cases, a very long time to work out the changes to the endorphins and those kinds of things. You know, the reason people get addicted to things is because they get a certain feeling out of it, and getting rid of that certain feeling, you know, they crave that feeling. That's what addiction's all about. And once you get into that cycle, it's tough in many cases to change that. Same thing with drug addiction. Studies have been done over decades in which parts of the brain are monitored when certain things happen. Sugar, drugs, gambling, pornography, even relationship stuff. Different parts of the brain sort of do what they call lighting up. And that's what you're talking about, is getting the brain to light up more when people think about their family and their children and their wives and husbands and those kinds of things, rather than on other illicit things, if you will.
And, you know, Chuck, really, when you think about that, the way somebody with diabetes reacts to sugar, they have different things going on in their body than other people do who don't have diabetes. Where some people that are addicted to certain, you know, they have a more chance of being addicted because of the chemistry makeup of their body. And so it's something that we're learning about. I'm sure we will learn more as we go on, but it is something that I have been wanting to address, especially with the pornography issue in schools, since I started doing this, because you could see it making some kids just turn everything off that you're saying because they are involved in pornography and their brain functions in a different way. And so when we started having problems with seventh graders, we said we have to do something about this. And teachers have been welcoming us in to talk about this because they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Now, Catherine, let me ask you a question. Because I did a little background research, you know, I usually do, looking at this, and I realized that, you know, you guys are, RUC is, you know, you do your work mainly through grants from the State Department of Health, right?
We do.
Okay. Now, when I went over to the State Department of Health website and I took a look at the, you know, youth, they have things like the Youth Risk Behavior Survey and things like that. There was also a program that they had, and it was called the Ohio Adolescent Health Partnership.
Yes.
And I looked at that, and I'm thinking, well, wow, you guys are the Ohio Adolescent Health Centers and Association, and I know that because I rep the association, your C4, as your lobbyist. And I'm looking at this, and I go in, because you can go to the Department of Health's website, and you can see this, and you can link in, and you click on that link, and they talk about this conference that they were having, and this was back in 2014, so they haven't updated it much since then. Not a surprise.
Right.
But one of the things that they put in, and this is coming from it's on the department's website, and so therefore you have to understand that, ladies and gentlemen, that, you know, if a state agency puts something up on their website, it's usually with the imprimatur that they are endorsing this idea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and of course, the section that deals with the granting and everything else that you guys do is in a completely separate section of their website than this.
Right.
But in this, there are some resources, and the first thing I clicked on were these guidelines for sexual health and adoption education. Mm-hmm. And it was from the Sexual Health and Adoption Education Project, a final report. But this is what at least this partnership's position is, not yours, again, let's make sure people are understanding,
right.
Ohio Adolescent Health Centers, that's Catherine and the good guys, Ohio Adolescent Health Partnership, that's a number of state agencies and places like Cincinnati Children's Hospital, which we now know from seeing in the media that they are, you know, basically 100% of any young person who comes to see them gets an okay for sex reassignment if they are struggling with their gender identity. Mm-hmm. Big problem there. But I understand why, because if you look on this website, these guidelines basically said, and I'll start this, it says, evidence suggests, I love it, it doesn't say evidence shows, evidence suggests. Well, if it's evidence, it would show. If it's opinion, it suggests.
Right.
So evidence suggests that secondary school sex education programs that teach medically accurate, evidence-based, comprehensive information about abstinence, pregnancy prevention, and safe sex practices to prevent STDs and HIV infection have a positive impact on healthy sexual behavior. How could they? That's what I want to ask you. How could it? Because you're sending a mixed message. You're saying to a young person, you're worth waiting for, you know, sex is best held. And of course, we have state law that says sex is best held within the confines of a monogamous marriage.
Right.
That you're supposed to be teaching. But here, even through the Department of Health website, they're pumping this, what they call the comprehensive, which basically, you know, they're making a bunch of claims, but none of them are actually backed by fact. They're just saying, well, it suggests that this is the case. In your experience in the classrooms, Catherine, do children react better and have better outcomes to a message that says, well, here's abstinence here, but then here's how to you know, apply a condom or take a contraceptive drug or whatever, and then here's how to you know, initiate for sexuality? Or do they respond better from saying, listen, folks, here's all the things that are out there. These are the ways you can avoid all of the circumstances and the calamities that happen around them by making wise choices.
Do you know what, Barry? We had a young lady in a classroom who they had the comprehensive program the week before, and then they were having relationships under construction that week. And she stood up in the classroom and she started yelling at the teacher and saying, why are we just hearing this? Why haven't we heard this before? Because this is the truth. They recognize the truth. It is so amazing to me. I always say a little bit of truth goes a long way. And these kids are smart. They're not dumb. And so she was very, very upset that they'd had the other people in the week before telling them how to put a condom on, basically telling them that having sex outside of marriage is okay. And then we come along and say, no, it's not, and we're going to tell you why. And so, and we get many times kids will say, either you saved my life or you told me why I'm supposed to wait. So I'm waiting from this point on. And many comments on, I'm going to renew an abstinent lifestyle. And so it's just amazing to me. You know, the comments are overwhelming. And so the kids are not stupid. They actually can recognize what people are trying to do. And they recognize that when the other groups come in and tell them that they just need to use a condom and that's all, and they can have sex with whoever they want, they know in their heart of hearts that does not work.
Right. Now, I want to do this, and you know, bear with me, Catherine. They've got a list in here of basically the guidelines that should be followed. And the first one is on the sexual health and adoption topic content. And I know, okay, they say medically, and then they add a new word, legally accurate information.
Oh, my gosh.
Which I believe you guys, everything that is in your curriculum follows those guidelines.
Yes.
But I wanted to go down this list, and I mean, it's a fairly long list. I won't go through all of them. I just want to go down to just a few of them, and maybe I might skip a couple and you know, say, okay, what about this? What about this? To say, okay, is this something that you guys teach in your program? And the first thing up there is adolescent sexuality is part of normal human development.
Okay.
Do you guys teach that in your program?
We do.
Okay. Sexual anatomy and physiology.
We do, and we teach it from the standpoint that you are wonderfully made.
Okay, excellent. The third, gender identity roles and sexual identity, including sexual orientation.
You know what? We do not want to offend, but here is one of the things that we say out of many things that we say.
Sure.
One of the things when we're teaching anatomy and puberty, we talk about how hormones go up and down during that period of time. And really, they go up and down throughout your high school years and really until your brain is fully developed. And mm-hmm. even after that, do hormone levels go up and down? Yes, they do. But what we're saying to them is if your brain isn't fully developed until you're age 25 and your hormone levels are all over the place, would you wait to make any decisions about something as important as who you are until your brain is fully developed?
Okay. Well, and I think that's wise, and it's a careful position to be in.
It's a careful position, but yet it makes them think.
But know, I found it very interesting that this, you know, they're pushing this as a guide. That's higher guideline than the next one, which is identifying healthy relationships.
Really? And you know what? Yeah. Their definition of a healthy relationship is use a condom.
We'll get to that because there are some things in here. I want our listeners to understand this is the thinking that's going on in the general field. With state agencies and folks even like our children's hospitals and everybody else when it comes to our adolescents and their sexual and health.
It's what sets RUC apart.
Exactly. Okay, so the fifth, this is the guideline, the fifth thing that's content should be the definition of sexual activity.
Go ahead,
yeah.
Here.
No, please go ahead. I want to hear what you say.
We do talk about what sexual activity is, but basically we only talk about it when we're teaching about anatomy and puberty.
Okay, I think that's
wise. Teachers are asking us to teach that again because kids know very little about how their bodies operate. And so we're really in a conundrum right now because we've always taught it in sixth grade because it meets the state guidelines, and we'd rather have it taught from our viewpoint, but now they're really requesting that we teach that, eighth grade and ninth grade, and we really don't have time to do it, we're obviously going to do it when they request it, but we really don't think that it should be necessary at that point, I guess, is the problem.
Sure, well, absolutely.
And there's so many other things to cover.
I have to say, Catherine, when I read that, my first thought was, oh, it's the DARE program for sex.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, teach them all the positions. Define sexual activity not in the textbook or the legal definition, but in these are all the fun positions you can get in.
Yeah, we don't do that.
I was going to say, y'all don't do that. And I'm sure that, and I've seen other programs, of course, a couple of the programs that they reference in these guidelines as being good programs and effective includes ones that I know I've done the research on, reducing the risk.
Yes,
it is
not.
Okay, that is exactly what they're doing is they will teach the DARE program version of sexual health, which is, let me tell you all about all the particulars about these positions and everything else, and then say that, well, it's not a good idea for you to try it, because then they get into the next, right after defining all the sexual activity, then define abstinence.
And so we know that that really is a predator. Teaching that way is being a predator on our children and trying to get our children to be ready for the predators that are coming their way. Instead of the way we teach is to beware of the predator and guard against it. They're preparing children for the predator.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so I'm going to go down just through a couple more of these because I know you teach this, the abstinence being a valid option, which can be chosen throughout life, even if you were previously sexually active. You know, you guys teach that.
Right.
Factors which contribute to risky behavior, including substance use and abuse, you teach that. Protective factors that affect behavior, including knowledge, attitudes, perceived risk, and self-efficacy. It's an interesting way of saying it, but I mean, I know you guys, when you talk about knowledge, you talk about knowledge of the consequences, attitudes toward themselves,
right,
more than anybody else, and perceived risk, and let's not say, hey, if you just put a condom on, you're going to be protected. Although, if you get down into a later one, you've got in number 16, the use of condoms to reduce transmission of STD and HIV infection. So you're supposedly teaching them about perceived risk, but then ignoring the actual risks that are out there regarding the fact that condoms are not effective to prevent transmission. You notice it says reduce transmission. So in other words,
yes,
they're assuming, hey, some people are going to get STDs and HIV using a condom. Do you want to roll the dice and be the one? And so they go down this road, and some of these things are crazy. But, you know, you're talking about transmission of STDs, signs and symptoms of pregnancy, signs and symptoms of the STDs, et cetera. And then you get into 14, abstinence is the most effective way to prevent pregnancy and sexually transmitted diseases. It doesn't even show up until number 14, well after the fact of already teaching them the definition of sexual activity and their gender roles. And here's the last one. And I really want to ask you what you teach. Okay. I'm gonna break this down because there's three pieces to it.
Okay.
They talk about pregnancy outcome options, including parenting. So you guys teach about parenting.
Yes.
If yes, someone's pregnant. Okay.
Yes, we do.
Adoption.
Yes, we do.
Abortion.
Actually, the only way that we talk about abortion, I wish we could go in and teach a lesson on that, but the way we teach it is to say to young people, what are young people's options? If they got pregnant as a teenager, what are their options?
Yeah.
The kids will say adoption. They'll say, parenting. And then they will say abortion. And then we say, well, tell me which one of those options would be best for the baby. And then obviously, you know, they'll say either parenting or adoption. And
right.
One of the things that we say is, you know, if a young girl decides that she's going to keep her baby, who is she really thinking of? And so we help them just sort through that to say, really, at that age, would adoption be the best answer? And we all know that parents step in on this and all kinds of things, but we want young people to be able to think through that. And so that is because adoption is such a abortion is such a controversial issue. That is the way we handle that issue. We also, when we're talking about reproduction, we get permission from the classroom teacher to pass around fetal models so that they can see that it really is a baby.
Okay, so. Very good. Very good. Now, here's the very last thing I'm going to ask you, because this is on this list of the goals and the outcomes, the topic content that should be there, according to this group. And that is a minor's access to reproductive health care in Ohio. I figured I'd get that kind of a response on this. And for our listeners, that phrase reproductive health care is code for abortion.
Yes.
You know, they're going to talk about, well, and of course, we're going to talk later after we get done with this, but there's a bill in the legislature right now that talks about, you know, giving minors access to pregnancy care, et cetera, including family planning or reproductive health care, which honestly is just basically saying a minor doesn't even have to get a judicial bypass in order to get an abortion in Ohio anymore. But again, I think it's interesting that they believe that this is a important piece of topic content. What do you think, Catherine? I mean, where does that fit? And is that something that you guys would fit into your curriculum?
Well, first of all, you know, one of our goals is to strengthen future families.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that right now, when you survey kids, they are hopeless. That only 17% of them are really hopeful when we come in. And really, about 68% are hopeful when we leave. So this is something that we want to take all the terrible things that are happening in their world and say, you know what, there's hope because you get to choose what you want for your future family. You can't change the decisions that adults have made in your lives, And some of them have made some of the adults in your lives have made really good decisions, and some haven't. You can't change those decisions, but what you can do is you can look to the future and say, what do I want for my future family? And so we want to leave young people with hope in a hopeless world. And that's what we try to do, is tell them, you know, they can make better choices. So I look at that whole list that you're talking about, Barry, and I think it's schizophrenic.
Yes, it is. It's very schizophrenic.
Yeah.
And I just want to say, you know, our kids are better than that, that we would use them as a yo-yo and take in these different programs in front of them and just jerk them around all over the place, you know. So we want to try to provide some kind of stability, that we understand where you're coming from, but there's always that you can have a better life. And so it strengthens the kids that are already pretty strong in their families, strengthens them. For the kids that are making terrible mistakes, it helps them, we hope, stop and think, and let them know that there are people that care. And that's one of the things they'll say: you really cared about us. Yes, we do care about them. We want them to be successful because our children must live among them, you know. And so we want everybody in our communities to be strong and healthy. And so I think we have a different goal. That goal is the goal that the things that you read are really somebody sometimes just trying to keep a job, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
We hope to change the world and make the world a better place.
Okay. So, I'm going to break in just a little bit.
Okay.
Because making the world a better place is what this is about. You know, we're way into this thing, and we haven't talked about the upcoming banquet.
This is true.
Catherine, tell us a little bit about the banquet coming up, the dates, times, places, and the theme, because the theme has popped up here about five times, and we haven't broken in to mention the theme. So I'm going to let you go on and on and on about the theme. You have plenty of time left. I want to know about the banquet, because what we've done now is we've laid the bait out in the form of what RUC does. Now we need to know what it needs. So go ahead, Catherine.
Well, and you know what? We need everybody involved in this, because our kids are desperate right now. This is critical timing to step in and help our kids understand what's going on in their world. And as Barry mentioned, we do have state funding. Some of our programs across the state have federal funding, and our actual state funding comes from the federal funds. So, but here's the problem. We, together across the state, reach about one-fifth of the students that we should be reaching. And so with every donation to our program, it allows us to reach more young people. So our fundraising banquet is coming up March 8th. It's at Villa Milano in Columbus. And it is at 6:30. Our dinner begins, and so our program. And so we are asking people to come and learn more about RUC and support what we do. We actually have about, out of the 25,000 students that we serve, almost 10,000 are served because of donations. So that tells you where we're at. If we don't raise money, those 10,000 students may not get services. And so the other thing that I can tell you right now is we're desperate for another teacher. Well, actually two teachers in the southern counties. And that would be as far over to where you live, Barry, in Gallia County.
Yep.
And then we need another teacher in Ross County. And so those two counties right now, we really, really could serve a lot more students. But we don't have a teacher. So if you're interested in helping us teach in the schools and you live in those areas, we really could use somebody. And so anyhow, our banquet, like I said, please come and learn more about RUC and help us out.
Well, that's very, very much a nutshell. What's the theme this year?
Oh, thank you. You asked me to say that. It's You Are a Gift. And that You Are a Gift can be taken in many ways. The students are a gift to us and to our world. Donors are a gift to RUC. You know, the instructors that we have are a gift to the classroom. So there's many ways that people are a gift. You guys have served on our board. You're a gift to us. And so there's many ways that we could look at this theme. But we want people to realize that they are very, very important, and they are a gift. Students are a gift to their future mates. So so if we look at it that way, you know, the we make a difference in our world just by being here. And so kids need to realize how important they are to our entire, you know, universe, because they're here for a reason and a purpose. And so we just think that each one of them is very, very, very important. And that's a message that we want to get to everyone.
Okay. I want to point out that I have slots open at my table. If you want to come to Relationships Under Construction and sit with a radio personality such as he is, believe me, and you'll know me right away because I have the face made for radio. You can come and sit with me. You would get a hold of us at www.principledpolicy.com. We have emails there that you can send an email to me. And again, it's March 8th. The banquet starts at 7. Is that correct?
No, 6:30.
6:30. I always mess that up. Okay. Yeah. 6:30 on March 8th. I believe that's a Thursday.
It is a Thursday, and if they come early, we're having something new this year. We have a silent auction. So come at 6 and look at the silent auction and then mingle with people. And
okay. And now,
those are always fun, too.
Yes,
I'll just let you know. Those are fun. So I think people will have a really great evening. It'll be an experience, folks. I mean, especially, you know, my understanding is, you know, when you hear the experiences of the folks in the classrooms and the students, you know, you can't help but understand that this is an important and a good work, and it needs to be supported.
Yeah, now I like this You Are a Gift theme. I really like it because what it says is, when you give someone a gift, do you go rummage around in your garage and find something that's been sitting back on a shelf or been abused in some way, been used, passed around? Oh, I think I'll go ahead and re-gift this, and you throw it in a box and put some crummy used paper on it, or do you go and get something nice, put some thought and feeling and all those things in the nicest way possible to present it to someone who really wants it? Is that which way is the best way to give someone a gift? And the answer is, you give them the best thing you can give them. Now, does that mean if you've already started engaging in activities that are bad that you can't recover? No, you can repair things. I've been known to get antique items in the past as a gift. What does that mean? Well, things sometimes are used, but they're used and they're repaired lovingly and given to me. That is where the You Are a Gift thing becomes ultimately important, and you have to have an attitude about yourself. It's teaching an attitude that you are worth having as a gift. Mm-hmm. And that's really why I like this theme. Now, I want people to know what they're going to see at the banquet should they decide to come, and we hope that they do decide to come and contact us and sit at my table. So, Catherine, what can they expect to see?
Well, you know, it's exciting because this is our 9th banquet, and we started out having speakers that, you know, would really entertain. And then the last couple of years, people just kept saying, well, show us more about RUC. Show us what you teach. And so this year we're doing that around our theme, You Are a Gift. We're showing them some of the things that we teach in the curriculum around that theme. And so I think it will be... people will be amazed that we are teaching this in the public schools, that we are welcomed into the public schools, and they will just hear a lot. We have a couple exciting surprises when you come about different people that are going to share, and so we are just excited to have people come and learn more about Relationships Under Construction.
Well, essentially, they're going to hear teachers talking about their experiences in the classroom, and they're also going to hear students talking about their experiences in the classroom. That's honestly, this is what I've always liked as a board member. The motivational speakers are fine, but I really like, and I've had numerous comments from people who I've invited to the banquet who always say, I like hearing what the teachers are doing. I like hearing what the students are hearing. And so that's what you're going to hear. Now, it's not going to be all, you know, there are, you're going to see some things that students are being confronted with. I think we normally show something that's being used by the competition, if you will, by people who are teaching other worldviews. Let's not kid ourselves. This is a comprehensive worldview education that's going on. We're teaching people how to look at life, how to think about things. And a worldview is something that you don't necessarily consciously apply, but it is something that is there. It's the presuppositions that you have when you look at things in life, and we're trying to reset people's presuppositions about what they think about all these issues, not just sexuality, but addiction and their entire lifestyle. So that's the kind of things you're going to find out at the banquet. And again, it's March 8th at 6:30. It's at the Villa Milano in Columbus on Schrock Road. It's believe me, sign up, because A, the food's really good. It always is very, very, very good. And the what you will learn is well worth the time, the input time. And we're not going to keep you all night. Right. We do our best to get you in there, get you fed, get you the information, and get you back home so you can think about it.
Well, you missed something totally, Chuck. Get you in, get you fed, get you the information, get you to become a partner.
Exactly.
And go home and think about how many more ways you can help them out.
That's right. Hey, by the way, Catherine, I want you to tell people, you just put a call out there for teachers, but you didn't give any information on how to get in contact with you.
Thank you, Chuck. Actually, you can either contact us at our office at 740-965-2046, and that's 740-965-2046, or you can register for the banquet or learn more about us at our website, relationshipsunderconstruction.com. So that's relationshipsunderconstruction.com, no spaces. So you can register for the banquet there, or you can register with Chuck, and he will register you for the banquet. You can call our office.
There you go. So it's coming up March 8th, 6:30, Villa Milano, Schrock Road, Columbus. We want you there. Please come join us. You will be amazed that it's not all cynicism out there. It's all this is a very positive program. Come out and have a look at what Catherine and Relationships Under Construction are doing. Anything you want to add before we close out, Catherine?
Well, thank you to both of you for both you, Chuck, and Barry, for being such a support to Relationships Under Construction. We appreciate your service on the board. We appreciate all the things that you have done for us, and we are just very excited when we find somebody that is as excited about what we do as we are. And so that really, we're all working on this together. And when you look at this, just ask yourself, if marriage and family are the way that our kids should go, then we really need to make a concerted effort to help them move in that direction, because they are certainly not moving in that direction right now. And a lot of them. So thank you to both of you for being such a great support to us.
Well, we need to thank you for doing what you do, because anyone who's ever worked with Catherine knows that she's a spark plug. And
absolutely.
We really appreciate the work that she does, her heart for this work. Bob, she is essentially irreplaceable.
I don't think so.
Well, she doesn't think so, but she is. That being said, unfortunately, we are out of time for today. I would like to continue this conversation for quite some time, but we can't. You know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And if you want to contact Relationships Under Construction, it's www.relationshipsunderconstruction, no spaces, relationshipsunderconstruction.com. And we ask that you join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.